All right, welcome to Computer Science 50, walkthrough 8.1. Why 8.1? Because we're going to have a second walkthrough next Monday to follow up with this walkthrough. It's going to be more examples, much of the same material, but if you're stuck with the problem set at that stage, then there's also that walkthrough to come to as well. Today, I'm going to have to breeze through a lot of material because this problem set is phenomenal, but it is doable. So I'm going to be keeping up a rapid pace. But if you have any questions, please do stop me, because that's what I'm here for. Okay, so what are the topics for this problem set? Problem set 8, mashup. There's JavaScript and Ajax, of course. We covered that some of that in Super Section yesterday, and in your respective sections as well, and using the Google Maps API. So we're going to use Google's Maps application programming interface, which is sort of the way to interact with a Google Map of your own on your own web page. And we're also going to pass XML using PHP. That's not so hard. We're going to cover that in one of the examples that we have. All right, so what does that involve? We have we have 7 steps. First, we're going to import the data from the $79.99 database. That was the database with all the population details and the census data that David bought for $80. If you've read the problem set, you should be able to find out the exact path name for getting that database from the server. Second, we're going to embed a Google Map into our page. That's really relatively easy. We're just going to copy and paste some code. Number 3, using the G-coder. The G-coder is the tool that converts some human-readable address, for example, 02138, to a latitude and longitude. That's the geocoder. And number 4, we're going to write the server-side handler. So if you remember from yesterday or from your sections or from lecture, there are 2 parts in Ajax. There's the client-side handler, which is JavaScript, and there's the server-side handler, which is PHP or ASP or any programming language that you want that runs on the server. So in our case, we're going to use PHP to implement that server-side handler. So in this case, in step 4, we're going to write our code in PHP, and then step 5, we're going to write the client-side Ajax code in JavaScript, and step 6, we're going to write code to deal with the XML response from the server side. That's we're going to write JavaScript to pass the XML response that we get from our own PHP script. We didn't actually manage to get through that yesterday in Super Section, so I'll be going through that in a little bit more detail than I usually would. And number 7, we're going to add Google News to the equation. You might want to actually think about Google News in earlier on as well, but I'm just going to go through it like this, and it shouldn't be too messed up either. Okay, so we have 7 steps, and we are going to start with step 1. First of all, if you've noticed from the problem set, so we're going to write a PHP server-side handler and a JavaScript client-side script. What we're also going to do is to write an import script in PHP that is going to import the database, import some data from the $80 database into our own database. So username underscore pset8, that was our database that we had, much like problem set 7. And we're going to import the data from that database. So how do we go about doing this? We're going to write a script in PHP, but unlike problem set 7 or what we've seen so far in lecture, we're actually going to write a command line PHP script. And that runs just like a C program that we've been writing. It's going to take some arguments from the command line, so argv, argc, we're all familiar with that now. And then it's going to interact with the database, the MySQL database that we have, in much the same way as problem set 7. And it's just going to fetch some data from the $80 table, which is a CSV file, a comma-separated values file, and then import that file into the database. So far, so good. Any questions about what we're going to do? Okay, so what do we do when we want to create a command line PHP script? First of all, there are 2 differences. The first difference is that there is a shebang, a sharp sign and a bang, an exclamation point, at the beginning of the PHP file, instead of the open brackets question mark PHP, we still need that. But before that, in the very first line, what we need is a shebang. And in our case, on our server, what we're going to have is sharp exclamation mark user bin PHP. That tells the operating system which interpreter to use when executing the script, because there are so many other programming languages besides PHP. There's Perl, there's Python, there's so many other programming languages, but in our case, we're using PHP, so we tell the operating system that we're going to use user bin PHP, which is like it's an executable file that interprets PHP for us and runs all the commands inside. That's the first difference. And then there's also the argv and argc. $argv, $argc, as you can see, these are PHP variables, And these are globals, much like $_get or $_post. And these exist in every command line PHP program to tell us, as the name might suggest, the argv and argc of the script that's currently running. So that's very similar to C, and you'll and we'll see what that actually means when we look at the example. This is example 1.php in your handout or on the website. And so what do I have here? In line 1, I have the... let me make the font size larger. Is this good? Okay, so in our first line, we have the shebang, sharp exclamation point user bin PHP, and then in line 2, we have the PHP open block. We can't forget that either, because if we do, then PHP will simply think this is an XHTML document because it doesn't have an open PHP block. So we have those two lines. Those are easy. And then we have echo. This is a command line PHP program. So this is similar to printfing in your in the main function of your C program. Yeah. And then what we're doing here is, so vardump is a function that's very similar to the dump function that we had in problem set 7. But problem set 7 actually defines that that dump function. It's just a function that David wrote. But vardump is the canonical PHP way to do that. So vardump argv. Argv is just the argv as in C. And you can ignore lines 10 to 16 for now. We'll just see what this does for now if we simply exit it here. So the way to run a PHP command line program is very much similar to how you run a C program. Right. So we cd to our directory, and then we have. So we're going to run the example 1.php script, but since it's not an executable, sorry, this was someone else's piece at 7. Since we're going to execute example 1.php, how might we go about executing this script? Any ideas? Okay, so the reason why we wrote that shebang at the top is so the operating system would automatically know how to run that program. So first of all, we have to make the program executable. So chmod 700 example 1.php. So 700 would make the file readable, writable, and executable to yourself and to nobody else. And then we can simply say example ./example1.php. And we've just run the program. And what we can see here is that, it says arguments are, and this is the result of the var dump of our argv. So we can see that argv was actually an array. It contained, the first element in our argv was the string ./example1.php, as you might expect, because argv0 in C was always the name of the currently executing program, right? So argv0. Sorry about the other output. That's part of that is part of the CSV that we're about to get to. All right. So you see here that the argv0 was example 1.php, and if we supply some arguments to it, for example, hello world, then we see that argv1 was hello and argv2 was world. So we see here that argv actually does the same thing as argv in C, except we don't need to do it in a main function. Argv is defined everywhere in C, and the same for argc as well.
Is it important that we know what the 14, 5, and 5 come from?
So the question was, is it important to know what the 14, 5, and 5 come from? 14 is just the length of ./example1.php, and 5 is hello, and world is 5 as well. Yeah. Any more questions about this before we move on? All right. Let's see. We'll go on to to step 2 of our steps. Embedding a Google map. Let me go back and explain CSV files. Sorry. So if you've taken a look, so who's taken a look at the database, that the $80 data? Okay, one person. No one else? All right. I guess it's before Thanksgiving and everyone's trying to wrap things up. The example, the data, the $80 database table, is actually a comma-separated values file, a CSV file. And a CSV file, as the name might suggest, is simply a file whose columns are separated by commas. So here we have an example CSV file called example1.csv. It's not in the handout, but it will be online. So the first column of our example1.csv file is just the columns of the table. You can think of this as an Excel spreadsheet. And the first column is, the first row are the columns of our table, name, color, and age. So the name is, as we can see here, that we have the name of the person, the favorite color of the person, and the age of the person. Now I see here that color could have been taken otherwise, so I mean favorite color by that. So line two is the first row in our data, and the name is John. Color is red, favorite color is red, and age is 19. And we have the second row in our data, which is Liz, whose favorite color is yellow, and whose age is 20. So can you all see how this can turn into a table? You know, it's just like an Excel spreadsheet or a MySQL table. So this is a CSV file, and it's a very simple one at that. But it's the same format that the $80 table is in. So we're going to use this kind of format and then somehow read that into our PHP script and then feed that data into our MySQL table. Okay. So how do we go about parsing this file? There's actually a very nice function in PHP called fgetcsv. So here we're opening the CSV file. Let's say it's in the same directory that we are currently in. Fopen example1.csv r, and then in lines 12 to 14 we have a while loop, and in that while loop we have $row is a temporary variable equals fgetcsv $fh. $fh is the file handle that we opened in line 10. Okay, and then while row equals fgetcsv var dump row. So presumably it's dumping some kind of row, and how it's doing that is in line 12, we have this reference to fgetcsv. And if you look at the PHP manual for fgetcsv, www.php.net/fgetcsv, you'll see that fgetcsv actually returns all the columns of the current row, of the next row in the CSV file, as an array of all the rows, of all the columns. So what I mean by that is precisely what I showed in example1.php. Let's see. Okay, so. Let's see. All right, so here we have. This is where our current var dump begins. So the first column, the first row of a CSV file is not special. It's the same as any other row, except in for humans, the first row is the other columns, the column titles of the CSV file. But PHP treats them just the same. So the first row is that array whose zeroth column is name, first column is color, and second column is age. And same for the second line, which was John, red, and 19, Liz, yellow, and 20. So if, as you can see, the rows have been transformed into arrays by fgetcsv. And one of those arrays is one is the return result of one call to fgetcsv. Okay? So let's see if we can modify this example to give us something nicer. For example, so we're in the while loop here in line 12, in line 13, sorry. How do we get the name of the person? So we have the $row variable. And remember that each of the columns was represented as an element in this array. How would we get the name of that current person?
Row 0?
Mm-hmm. Row 0, yeah. So we try this out, echo row 0. And as I said yesterday, echo is the same as print, except just a bit faster. So if we do echo row 0 and then new line character, we should get a listing of names. And here we have it, name John and Liz. named John and Liz. What happened to, did we have, oh, okay, we only had two people. Okay, so name, John, and Liz. So we've seen the first column of each row, row zero, that is, was printed out to the screen. Okay, so can everyone see how we could get all the data from the table now? Yeah. Okay, and then it's just a matter of importing that into our MySQL database by repeatedly calling MySQL query or doing something fancier. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just wanted to, like,
list this stuff. So the question was, what if we didn't want the column name? And that's a very good question, because in our database, we have the first row is the column title, so we want to get rid of that first. So either we could use FC, because we did in the bitmap example with C, or we could actually just insert a spurious reference to fgetcsv in line 11. So we can say, we can just say fgetcsvfh, and I'll show you how we can do that. If we just insert fgetcsv here, then we can see here that we've just gotten rid of the column title. Do you understand how this, why this works? Because fgetcsv, besides reading in the next row, also increments the position of the file. So we're reading in one line. So effectively, in line 12, we've just gotten rid of the first line. OK. Yeah. Any more questions?
Is the dot in 15 the
concatenator operator? Yes, it is. This is just concatenating this string with this string. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, you could get you could use the fgetcsv function to get rid of other lines as well. But
would you do that?
So by other lines, what do you mean?
Like, say you didn't want Liz to show up in this database for some reason.
Okay.
So you wanted to get rid of the second line.
Well, so the question was, if I wanted to get rid of Liz, could you just use fgetcsv? Why would you want to get rid of a particular line? Okay, so if you wanted to get rid of a particular line after reading the name, for example, let's say you had a statement, if $row 0 equals Liz, then you could break, you could continue there. The continue statement continues on to the next iteration of the loop. Yeah, so continue is, it also exists in C. It's also a PHP construct that goes on to the next iteration. It just quits the current iteration of the while loop, or any loop, actually, and then it just goes on to the next one. Yeah, any more questions? Okay, so we've imported the data. Let's say this works now. And then we should end up with some kind of database. So the database that David's using for the solution is like this. So is everyone familiar with PHP MyAdmin now after problem set 7? Okay, so I forgot the password, so I can't show you the solution. Actually, wait, I can't. Okay. Yeah. All right. So CS50, what CS50 is doing is we have a structure that looks like this. There's a zip code, there's population, there's latitude, there's longitude, there's the state and their city. So this is what our SQL schema looks like. And once we've imported that data, see that we have all these zip codes and all the other data from the data. So by the end of writing imports and running it, you should end up with a database table that looks a bit like this. It doesn't need to be exactly the same, but it should look similar. Okay? All right, so let's see. Next, we're going to embed a Google map. What this means is that we're just going to go to Google's homepage, code.google.com/api/maps, and then we're going to copy the sample code from Google. It's very simple. If you just go to that website and click on get an API key, and then if you just click it and then sign in with your Google account, your Gmail account, or any other Google account that you have, then you should end up with a page that just has a sample, some sample code, and then you can just copy that, and it works. In fact, I've just done that with example 2.php, which is simply a version of that copied. Actually, I haven't changed it at all. Let's see. So this is my example 2.php, and yours will be exactly the same if you just copy it from Google. It's a Google map centered on Palo Alto. Okay, that's very simple. It's just copy and paste. So what can we do with this Google map? Obviously, we have to do something interesting with it. And the first step that I'd like to introduce is using the geocoder. So as I explained, the geocoder was a mechanism provided with Google Maps to convert a human-readable address, like 02138, or some particular street address, like 1 Oxford Street, into a latitude and longitude. And the geocoder, which is an object called gclient geocoder, provided with Google Maps, uses AJAX. So if we remember from section or from lecture or from yesterday, AJAX actually uses this asynchronous paradigm. So you send it a request, and it doesn't reply immediately, but you give it a function to call later when the response comes back. And then when the browser knows that the AJAX request has come back, it'll execute that function that you told it to execute. Okay? So instead of... For example, with fopen and with an external website with PHP, you could just call fopen, and the result of fopen would be the file handle to that website, and it'll return only after the return response had come back. But with AJAX, it doesn't wait for it to come back; it just simply comes back. But you have to specify a function for it to execute when it does come back, and it's the same thing with the geocoder, and I'll show you how it does that with example 3.php. Example 3.php here. So the first thing I do is to initialize the geocoder. Var geocoder equals null. This is in the global scope. And this is in the head element. So we have the geocoder here. We've just created a null element. And one thing we have to change from example 2.html, the Google example, is to move the map variable from being a local variable of load to being a global variable in the global scope. That's because we're going to use the Google map elsewhere, outside of the load function. Okay. So if we had the map variable defined only within the load function, as we do in example 2.html, as we do here, var map equals, then we can only use the map inside the load function. But in example 3.html, we're going to use the map outside of the load function. So we've just moved it to line 17. Okay. And then load is exactly the same. This part is exactly the same as example 2. We've created a new gmap too, except this is no longer var, it's just map, because it's a global variable. And then map.setCenter, Palo Alto. And then we're going to initialize the geocoder. This is the new code, line 26. Geocoder, which was the global variable that we defined up there, geocoder equals new gclient geocoder. Okay, so this creates a new object of the class gclient geocoder. All right. Okay, so once we've created that geocoder in load, we have to somehow use it, right? So I've created a form here down here in XHTML, which is a simple form that has an address called address box. The ID is address box. And then we have a submit button that says go. And this is wrapped in a form with the action nothing, method nothing, because we're not actually going to submit this form to an external page. But we have an onSubmit attribute. So if you remember from yesterday or from any of the lectures or sections, then onSubmit is the event handler that happens, that fires or triggers when the form is submitted, so when the go button is clicked, basically. So when the onSubmit handler executes, it's going to execute the go function, the go JavaScript function, and then it's going to return false. So can anyone remember why I have returned false and what it does to the submit? Mm-hmm. You don't want the screen to refresh. Yes. More specifically, you don't want the page to go to another page. Basically, you want the submit function to stop right there. Okay? So you want when the user tries to submit the form, JavaScript will execute the go function and then stop right there. Okay? That's because if we didn't have return false, then we would simply go on to, so we would simply refresh the page, and the our action of calling go would become useless. Do you get it? So basically, this is something that many AJAX forms use, the fact that they don't actually need to get or post to any external page. We're just using forms as a neat wrapper around these input elements. Okay. So we call the go function, and what the go function does is up here, function go, in line 30, we read in the address, so var address equals document.getElement by ID address box.value. This is exactly the same thing we did yesterday when we read in the address from, or when we read in the value from some input element. So document.getElement by ID is sort of like a mantra that's repeated in JavaScript. We get the value of the input element named address box. Okay? So this was a way of referring to the values of external objects in our DOM, a document object model. So we've got the address in our variable, local variable, var address, and then we invoke the geocoder. So geocoder, if you recall, was the geocoder that we initialized up here in line 26. And then we say geocoder.getThatLong. This is a function that's defined within geocoder, and it takes two arguments, the address, so the human readable address, for example, 02138 or Cambridge, Mass, or something like that, as a string in address, and then a function. So does anyone remember what type of function this was? What the name for this kind of function was? Yeah? Yeah, exactly. It's a lambda function. What that means is that it's a function without a name. So as you can see here, this function doesn't have a name. It says function, and then where we would have a name usually, we have nothing. And then we have simply function point. What this function is, it spans from here to here. It's a function that is called by the geocoder when the geocoder finishes returning the latitude and longitude. Okay, so we're saying, hey geocoder, give me the latitude and longitude of this address. And when you get that address, can you call this function, this lambda function, for me? Okay, and that lambda function is precisely that function point. So what the geocoder will do is, okay, I've got a latitude and longitude now. So I'll plug in the latitude and longitude I got in this nice object called point, and I'll give it back to you in the function that you told me to call when I got the response. Is that clear? Okay. So this is we have to do this because it's asynchronous. If this wasn't asynchronous, then we could, for example, call getLatLong, and then that might return the point, for example. But since the geocoder doesn't wait to get a response from the server, we have to call it like this. And you can do it exactly like this in your own problem set 8. Okay? So function point, so point is actually a type called glatlong, glatlng, with big L's, which is like a struct that contains the latitude and longitude of that particular point on the Earth. Okay? It's defined in Google Maps, and if you want to look up more about it, then the Google Maps API reference is always a good source of information for that. So function point, so we've got the point in this function, and then if not point, so if we don't have a point, if it returns null, so for example, if the user typed in an invalid address, then we would alert the user point could not be found, or if we did find a point, then we now have a valid lat long in point, and point is type glat long.
Mm-hmm. Plug the latitude and longitude into point and then plug point into the lambda function?
So what's being plugged into the lambda function is a point that is the point that contains the latitude and longitude provided by the geocoder.
Provided by the geocoder upon getting the var address.
Right. So the geocoder will receive the address, and then it will contact the server. And when the server responds with the latitude and longitude, the geocoder will respond to you with the point.
And then the point gets put into function point, or into the lambda function, and things happen.
So did you say the point would get put in?
Yeah.
Yes, so the point would get put into this lambda function, okay. Function point. So what we're referring to here in line 36 and in line 42, point, this is the latitude and longitude that we've just got from the server. Okay? So this can be a bit confusing at first, but it's a theme that's repeated in AJAX all over the place. Okay. Any questions? No. Okay. So in line 42, once we've got a valid point from the geocoder, then we say map.setCenter.13. What this does is it simply recenters the map to a particular point in our map. So map was the global variable that defined our map. We initialized it right at the top and then initialized it in load. Map.setCenter, this is a function that's provided in gmap2, which is the type of object that represents a Google map. And then we center that point to a point, which is the point that we have in the lambda function. And then 13 is just a zoom level, 13 meaning very zoomed in. So let's see what this actually does. When executed, this is example3.html. So example3. Okay, so we have this form here, which invites us to type in the address. So let's type an address like 02138. Then we hit go, and then we're recentered in Cambridge. Okay? So this seems to work, right? So we use the geocoder to convert 02138 into a human readable, into latitude and longitude, which we don't know what it is, but it's in the JavaScript. And then the JavaScript recentered the map to that position. Okay? So this actually works for any type of address. I don't know, it might... So yeah, this recentered it on the Science Center because it understands any type of human readable address. Okay? So any questions about example3.html or the geocoder? No? All right. So we'll go on to example 4 or our next topic, which is, getting the bounds. So since we're moving the map around, since the user is moving the map around, we have to get the bounds of the map. So that is, we have to somehow find out where the user is looking on the map. Okay? So imagine the whole map of the world, and the user is looking onto a particular viewport of the map, right? So we have to find out what those bounds are. And we can do that by using the map.getBounds function, which is one of the functions of a gmap2, a map object. And that returns returns an object that has functions get southwest, get northeast, etc. So that is, if we have a map and the user is looking at a particular position of that map, then we can get the southwest coordinate of that map and the northeast coordinate of that map. Okay, so we can extrapolate a rectangle from that get bounds function. And then we can tell PHP what portion of the map we're looking at. So using AJAX, we can tell it that we're looking at, for example, the position between Oxford Street and Linden Street, for example. Okay, and then PHP can tell us what zip codes are inside it. Okay, so is everyone familiar with what the problem set does when it's implemented? Yeah. So if anyone isn't, then I'll pull up the solution, which is. So this is our mashup, and so it has 5 zip codes marked. Here's one that's hiding here. So when you click on one of these markers, it'll show the news for that particular that location. Okay, and when we move the map, we get 5 new zip codes, and it keeps on doing that. So that's what I meant by the JavaScript has to tell PHP via AJAX what. A particular region of the map is being looked at by the user right now. Okay, so what we do is you saw my note down there. There's no way you can do this problem set without doing the reading. If you're confused, or if you even if you're not confused, then you should look at the documentation here. It's linked from the problem set as well. code.google.com/apsmaps/maps/documentation-reference.html. This is the Google Maps API reference documentation, and it documents every single object that's inside a Google Map. So if you have a question about any type of object, then you should your first port of call should be the Google Maps API documentation. Okay, so that provides all the methods and properties, and it tells you, and it has example code, and it tells you exactly what every function does in the Google Maps API. Okay, so we have that. Let's see. So now before we go on, I'd like to take a tape break to let Chris change the tapes, and then we'll get on to actually writing the PHP server-side handler. All right, so next, since we've got the bounds now from JavaScript, let's say we've implemented get bounds, and we've got northwest, got southwest, and got northeast, and we can tell the latitude and longitude to PHP. And you can do that because get southwest and get northeast will return a point in the map. And a point is a glat long, the one that we saw earlier. And a glat long contains longitude and latitude. And you can find out on the documentation exactly how to do that. So now that we've got those bounds and we've told PHP what those bounds are, so this is using AJAX, and it's very similar to the BMI calculator example that we had yesterday, and in any of the examples that David's shown in lecture with AJAX. So we've told PHP what those bounds are, and then once we've done that, we can use our database, the database that we imported using the import function, the program, to retrieve the five largest cities, that is the zips and latlongs. We can retrieve the five largest cities and the zips and latlongs for those cities within those bounds. Okay? Does everyone see what's going on here? Okay. Some gotchas. Some cities have multiple zip codes, so we have to do some manipulation of the data to make sure that we only have one zip code for each city. And we can use that by using the group by and sum functions of MySQL. The queries in MySQL that we use for PromSet 8 get a little bit more complicated than the ones that we used in PromSet 7 because we're using multiple columns and munging them together to get some data. And because we want the five largest cities, we want to order by, which is MySQL's way of sorting data, and then limit, which is MySQL's way of limiting the data that we have. So order by something, limit five, would return the top five results from that data set. So let's see how we can actually do that by using PHP MyAdmin and using the course's database. So we have our database here. It has zip code, population, latitude, longitude, state, and city. And let's see if we can whip up a quick example that shows the five largest cities within the database itself. So we won't specify latitude and longitude. We won't specify those constraints. We'll just say within the entire database. So it's a select query, as usual. And select, we want the zip. So select zips, select zip code, population from zips, which is the name of the table, then order by population, limit five. So order by population desk. Desk means from in descending order, so from biggest to lowest. So we're going to get the largest populations from the table. This, if you can see here. Okay. So we'll go. Let's hope this works. Yep, it does work. So we've got the five largest zip codes and their populations. Okay, does this seem right? I'm not familiar with the zip codes, but I guess it's right. Well, anyway, the problem here is that some cities have more than one zip code, and in this case, we haven't run into that problem. Actually, we might have run into this problem. So a big city like New York might have several zip codes representing a small area. Yes? Oh, okay. So 3 and 4 might both be Chicago. So we can solve that problem by using the group by command. And how we do that is, order by population, desk, sorry. So from zips, group by, we can say group by city state. So what this means that it's taking the city and state and wrapping that into one thing, and it's grouping all the rows that we're returning by those cities and states. So if we have the same city and state, So for example, if Chicago appears twice in our result set, then that will be concatenated into one result. So we only see one city in the result set. So we won't have multiple cities being so we won't have the same city being represented multiple times because they have different zip codes. Okay. And since if we're munging together two entries in the row in the database, if we're munging together the two zip codes, then we want to get the sum of those two populations, right? Because each zip code has a population, and each city has multiple zip codes, so each city should have the sum of all those populations. So we can do that very simply by saying sum population, the sum of the populations that were grouped by city state, okay? And then we can, and because we want to order by the sum of the populations, we can say, by sum I mean SUM of the populations, we can say order by sum of populations, or to make our lives easier, we can say sum population as P. What this does is it aliases the name P to the sum of population. So that's like saying P is the same thing as saying sum population. Okay? And then sum population as P from zips grouped by city state order by not population but by P. Okay? So we're ordering by the sum of each city state population. Does everyone get it? It's a bit of a complex SQL query. But let's see if this works. I hope it does. Go. Okay, it seems to have worked. Does this look correct now? Yeah? Yeah, okay, that's good. So now we've got this this result set, and now we've ensured that one city isn't being represented more than once. Okay? So that's what our group by and sum statements did. So this is the SQL code for that. Okay. Okay. So now that we've got those cities and we've got the five largest ones now because we ordered by P. We ordered by the sum of the populations of each city, and then that was in descending order, and we limited the five. So we got the top five results. So you can imagine if you have the latitude and longitude, you can add as P from zips. Where latitude is bigger than something and smaller than something, and longitude is bigger than something and smaller than something, order by P. Oh, so group by city state. Okay? So can you see how you can insert the where statement to actually use this for good effect? Because at the moment, it always returns to the five largest cities in the United States. What we want is the five largest cities in our particular bounds. Okay? All right. Is anyone confused, or do you have any questions about this? No? Okay. So that's our SQL query. So after we've got the cities, we probably want to return the results in some kind of XML form. Okay? Just like in any AJAX, we want to return our results to the JavaScript, because this is a PHP server-side handler for AJAX. We want to return the results as XML. Okay? And how we can do that is up to you. It's very easy since you're just printing out XML statements. One example of such might be example 1.cs, cities.xml, which is not in the handout, but here. So we have the cities open tag. This is the parent element. And then inside we have two city elements. Each has a zip name, latitude, and longitude. So this might be a sample output of your PHP XML server-side handler. Okay? Does everyone see how this fits into the equation? Okay, so this is cities.xml, and it shows you an example of what might be returned. And then once we've got this result from our PHP server-side handler, we want to create some JavaScript to get that data and then put markers on the map, right? So this is our list of five largest cities in our bounds. And we want to get that list of cities and then put markers on each of those cities. So we can, I'll show you some more puzzle pieces so we can write the client-side JavaScript. That was AJAX. One thing we have to do with this particular example is that we have to register. So when we move the map, as we saw earlier in the solution, we have to create a new list of five zip codes, right? five cities. So we saw in David's example that we were, so if we have, this is not, so if we have a map, and then we moved the map, then we call the server and ask for five more cities that are in our new bounds, right? And the same thing happens when we zoom out. We get a new list of five cities, okay? So it seems that we need to have some kind of event handler for when the map is moved or when the map is zoomed out, right? So we need to get called when the map is moved or zoomed. So we can do that by using the moveEnd and zoomEnd functions that are provided in the Google Maps, moveEnd and zoomEnd, and we can register our listener. So what this means is we can tell Google Maps to call us when either moveEnd or zoomEnd happens at a particular function if any of these actions happen. Okay. So this is a bit like AJAX. Instead of telling it to do something directly, you're indirectly telling it to call you later. Okay.
Mm-hmm. These adducers, they go into the client side the JavaScript.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So this goes into the client side JavaScript,
and also it reports back to the PHP as soon as you start moving or zooming the map.
Right. So and it reports back to the PHP as soon as we move or zoom in or out. And I'll show you how we can actually do this in JavaScript. So the example is the next one, which is which one? Example 4.html. Here we have in our load function, so when we're creating the map, we say gevent.addListener map, which is the global variable representing the map, and drag end and move end, these are the events, and get new markers. Get new markers is a function that we define down here, which simply writes out a message, you moved or zoomed. So these are the two critical lines in example 4.html. We're going to add listeners. So we're telling Google Maps to tell us when the map is zoomed or dragged, and to call that function, get new markers, when either of those two things happen. Okay? And we'll see that this actually works by going to example 4.php. Example 4. We move the map. You moved or zoomed. So we can see that get new markers was called because the map was moved. And we can also zoom out, and I get a message saying you moved or zoomed. Okay. So does everyone see how this is working? Yeah. Actually, no, sorry, not drag end, zoom end. Can you correct that on your handouts, please? Sorry, so zoom end is the event that happens when the map is zoomed, and move end is the function that happens when the map is moved. Yeah. Okay, so we have that. Example 4.html, any questions about zooming and moving? Okay. And one note. Get new markers should call the PHP. It should be an AJAX function that calls the PHP server and gets a new list of five cities. Okay? This is very similar to what we did yesterday in section and lecture. And instead of using XML HTTP requests, you can actually use GXML HTTP, which makes the process of initializing a XML HTTP request a little bit easier. You can look that up in the documentation. It's called GXML HTTP. But if you don't want to use that, you can also use XML HTTP requests as well. All right. So now that we've called called the server, we have to read the XML HTTP request or the GXML HTTP object, and then call its response XML property. Okay. This is what I didn't get to yesterday. And it's going to, it's simply a case of reading in the output from the server and then somehow using that data to do what we want to do on the client side. Okay? Does everyone see the context here? So we got some data from the server and we're trying to do something with that data on the client side. Okay. So response XML, which is an object in XML HTTP request and in JXML HTTP, is a DOM-like tree representation. It's a tree representation with nodes representing each of the XML elements that we have in our XML document. And I'll show you an example of XML, of an XML document. So let's see. We have cities.xml that I showed earlier on. So we have this cities.xml. This is an XML document, right? With the cities element and a child of that cities element, city, which is an element itself with attributes zip, name, lat, and long. And it also has a... So cities has another child with of a type city with those attributes as well. Okay? Once we've got that XML data using AJAX, does everyone remember how we got a response from the server and how we created a function to respond to the onReady state change handler? Yeah? So this was when the server responded to us with a valid response, and we wanted to get the response, so we called response XML. So what I'm defining here is a variable called cities request, which is the XML HTTP request or GXML HTTP request.responseXML. If you're confused about this, you can go back to the super section 10 notes, which uses response text. Here we're using response XML, which is the other way to get a response. This is response XML is a tree-like representation if the response was XML. Response text is simply the plain text version of the response. So response XML dot get elements by tag name. So remember, this gets all the tags that match that are children of response XML in an array. So it gets all the city elements from the XML. So in our case, how many elements would there be in the array that's returned by get elements by tag name? Pardon?
Five.
Yeah, exactly. So we will have five elements in the cities array because we're returning the five cities that are in the five largest cities that are in the bounds. In cities.xml, we'd have two, right? Because we only have two cities in that array. So we're iterating over the cities for vi I equals zero I smaller than cities.length. You can also do this with for var i in cities. So we saw yesterday that we could also, JavaScript had the syntax of iterating over an array. And that was the for var I in cities syntax. But we can also use this more C-like syntax of for var I equals zero and incrementing the I. Basically what we're doing is going through each city that we have. So var city equals cities I. Can everyone see what this is doing? Just retrieving the next city in our cities element. And then I say debug here. What I'm just doing is getting the name of the city and then the zip code of that city. So one new function that we're using here is getAttribute. What getAttribute does is it gets the value of a particular attribute that's specified. So if we went back to cities.xml, we saw that each city had a zip attribute and a name attribute and a lat long attribute. Okay? So what city.getAttributeName would do, for example, if the current city element was this city, Cambridge, then city get attribute zip would be 02138. City dot get attribute name would be Cambridge MA. Okay? So let's see if we have this. Yeah, exactly. So this cities.xml, you can think of it as being generated by the PHP server-side handler that we've been writing in the previous step.
The entirety of it is the response text.
Yeah, so this is the entirety of this is response text. And this is represented in response XML as a DOM tree, as a tree. Okay? All right, so we've got that. We can deal with the XML response now. So now that we've got a list of cities and the corresponding latitudes and longitudes, we can now start placing markers on the map, okay? We can do this by creating a new gmarker object. A gmarker represents a marker, and it requires a glatlong, the position, the latitude and longitude of that marker when we create the gmarker, okay? And then we can add a gmarker to the map using the add overlay function of the map. And I'll show you exactly what this means in example 5.html. Example 5.html, let's see. So when we load the map, we allow zooming. This is just from the previous example. And we add a marker. We call the function addMarker, which is the function that I just created here. AddMarker with these coordinates, these latitudes and longitudes. Okay? And then addMarker, what it does is it creates a glatlong representing the position of the marker. So var point, local variable, glatlong, new glatlong, latitude and longitude. Okay? So that creates a latitude and longitude struct, which represents the latitude and longitude of a particular point on the Earth. And then create a marker with that point. So var marker equals new gmarker point. So the point being the struct containing the latitude and longitude of the point that we want. Now we've got a marker. And so now we have to add that marker to the map. And that's very easy. map.addOverlayMarker. Okay? So it's basically a three-step process. Well, first, we create a glatlong with the latitudes and longitudes that we want. And then we create a gmarker with that point that we've just created. And then we add that marker to the map using addOverlay. Okay? Any questions about this? No? Okay, so I'll show you what this actually does. As you might expect, it works. Or as you might not expect, it works, rather. See, this is example 5.html. Okay, and as you can see here, it's not very interesting, but I've created a marker on Google's headquarters in Palo Alto. So the latitude and longitude that I specified in the code was just that point where the marker is now. Okay? Any questions about example 5 or adding markers? No? All right, so the last step that we have to do is to add Google News to the equation. So as you saw here in the mashup, when you clicked on any of these markers, then we got a listing of the current news items that were relevant to that particular city on the map. Okay, so we somehow have to get this list, and we can do this by asking Google News for a list of news items. And excuse me, we can do this because Google News now has this nice RSS feed feature. So if we call this URL, news.google.com/news?geo, get geo equals 02138 and output equals RSS, we get an RSS feed of the news items that are current here. So this is formatted in a nice way because of Firefox, but it's got 10 news items that are relevant in 02138 right now. Okay? So what this feed actually looks like, if we look at the source, so it's in one line, but let's see if we can format it nicely. Okay, so if we... Now, this doesn't look very nice, but... trust that it is. Oh, okay, so that's because I missed out the. Yes. No. That's not what I want. Yep. Okay. So this is an XML document that comes from Google News that represents the some news. So let's see here. We have. The first thing that we have to notice that is that the parent of the element is called RSS. The parent element is called RSS. And then inside we have channel. And then, generated. Okay, so let's scroll down. For each news item, we have this item object, item element. And each item element contains some child elements, the title of the news item, the link of the news item, the end link is right there. We have a globally unique identifier, GUID. We have the publication date, and we have a description, which is in HTML, and then we end the item. So what child elements from this item element do we want to use in our mashup? We only need to use two of these.
Mm-hmm. The title.
Yeah, exactly. So we only need the title and the link from this. So somehow we have to read this RSS feed. An RSS feed is written in XML. So we need to read this XML document. And then we need to parse out the title and the link from that document of each news item that was in the file. Okay, so Google, we can either do this on the client side or the server side, right? Or not really. Because JavaScript can do XML, and actually PHP can do XML. But we actually want to do this on the server side, because there's something called the same origin policy that prevents you from making an AJAX request to a server other than your own. So if we're hosting this mashup on cloud.cs50.net, then we can only reference, using AJAX, files that are on cloud.cs50.net. Okay? So what we want to do is to extend our server-side handler that we wrote in the previous steps to return the news articles for that particular zip code as well. And we can do that because PHP has this nice extension called SimpleXML that SimpleXML, you can find out more at this URL, www.php.net/SimpleXML, to parse XML. It's exactly for that purpose. And then, as it says here, we can then mix the news items, those news items, into the latitudes and longitudes we returned in step 4.2. And I'll show you how we can actually use SimpleXML in example 6.html. Let's see, example 6.php, because this is a PHP document, of course. So what this does is, it's a separate server-side handler for now, but you'd want to integrate this into our previous server-side handler to prevent making too many AJAX requests to our server. We need to return the zip code and the articles for that zip code in one bundle. So what we do here is we do some validation. We check that $get_getz is a proper zip code, so a five-digit number. That's a regular expression. Then we put that into $zip code. Remember, this is PHP. And then we create a URL, news.google.com/news/geo=, the zip code. Then we get the RSS feed in a string. So if you recall from prompt set 7 and its helpers.php, we can get the contents of a particular URL using the file get contents function of PHP. Okay, so XML string will now contain the XML, the RSS feed of our XML of our RSS feed in a string, and then we can generate a tree from feed. What this does is we simply create a new simple XML element. This is an extension of PHP, and it's installed on the cloud, and we simply do new simple XML elements XML string. Okay, so we read the contents of the whole RSS feed into a string, and now we're generating a tree from that string using new simple XML element. And what simple XML element is it's a tree, much like the tree representation of an XML in JavaScript. It's represented as a tree, similar to an array in PHP, and we've saved that into $XML. So let's see here. What I can do is say for each is the construct in PHP that iterates through each element in an array. For each XML channel, because channel was so we're saying channel here, but wasn't the parent element something else? What was the actual parent element? Do you know, does everyone understand which XML file I'm talking about? Yeah, this one, right? The horribly formatted one. We saw that the parent element was actually RSS, right? And we can see that it's a parent element because it's the last one that ends the XML file. But why channel? Because if we're going through each node in the XML document, you might expect that we would refer to RSS first and then channel, because channel is a child of RSS. But one thing about simple XML element is that it ignores the parent element. That's because the $XML represents the parent itself. Okay, so $XML is the RSS element. So we're referring to its child, channel, and then the item. So what this does is it goes into the RSS feed, and it drills into the XML document. It goes into RSS, then channel. Then it finds a bunch of items, because remember, we have 10 items from Google News, 10 item elements. And then for each of those 10 item elements, so this, you can think of this as an array. XML channel item is an array containing each of the 10 item elements. And then for each of those, we call that $item. And then echo $item title. So return the title of that news item. And then that we're done. If we go to example 6.php, it's not working. Let's see why. So you may find that because we're referring to external servers, sometimes this will stop working. I know why. No, it's my mistake. I didn't specify a zip code, so 02138. Z equals 02138. And there we go. We can see 10 news items that pertain to 02138. Okay? So do you have any questions about what this part of the code does? Because this is the important part in this example. And line 25 is sort of cryptic, but it boils down to simply drilling down into the XML document until we find the element that we need. Any questions?
And just calling it $item is just a way of, couldn't you just say $XML points to channel, points to item, points to title, echo all that?
So the question was, couldn't you just say $XML channel item title? The problem with that is $XML channel item. Item itself is actually an array of all the possible items. So because there's only one channel, right? And there are several items in the channel. So $XML channel item is actually an array. And we're saying for each of those elements in an item, for each of those elements in that array, we'll call each of those $item and then execute the loop. Okay? So it's like a temporary pointer to the element of the array, dollar item is.
But isn't XML point channel point item doing the exact same thing? It's just longer.
Oh, so isn't dollar XML channel item doing the same thing? No, it's not.
As dollar sign item, like, couldn't you just say XML points to channel points to item points to title?
So can't we just say XML points to channel, points to item, points to title? No, we can't, because there's only one RSS parent element. There's only one channel element, but there are several item elements. Okay? So that's the critical difference between between items that only have one child and between items that have multiple children. Okay? Because channel has multiple children named item. And so for each of those items, we call it dollar item, just for now. And then we call the title, we extract the title from that item in the loop. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. Any questions about simple XML element? No? Okay. If you get confused, there's always the PHP documentation for simple XML element available on the PHP manual, www.php.net. And also, this works for Google News, so it will work in your problem set as well. So that's adding Google News to the equation. So presumably, once we've extracted the articles from a zip code, we want to integrate that into the XML file that we're returning to the client-side JavaScript, right? So what would that XML look like? Cities2.xml, which is not in the handout, but here, cities2.xml. This contains a possible format for your final XML file. So for each city element, we have one article, but we can have multiple articles, right? So for each city element, we have these article elements that represents the title and then the link. Link equals something. Okay? Actually, article is ended here, so it's open article, end article. So you can imagine there being 10 of these here. Okay? And then you can imagine five of these cities, city elements, being in the XML file. Okay? So does everyone see how you could generate this now? Remember, we had the earlier steps, and then we just had the Google News step. And if you combine the two, you can come up with an XML. You can come up with the output of your PHP handler, which should be something like this. Okay. And now can you also see how with this XML file you could come up with the with the code for generating markers for each of those zip codes? Yeah? Is everyone confused or no? Okay. So now that we've got those markers, the last step that we have to do is to implement those pop-ups, the pop-ups that show the news items, as we saw in the example here. When we clicked on one of these markers, then we came up with the news items in this window. And this window is actually called a G-info window, and it's one of the things provided by Google, but and it's it simply you simply specify some source code. This is HTML, so you simply specify this HTML to the Google Maps API, and it'll create this info window for you at a particular point that you specify. And now I think you're ready to do that for yourself with the documentation, so I'll say RTFM and leave it up to you to look that up in the Google Maps API documentation. Okay, so any questions about anything that we've covered? I know there's a lot of material in this problem set, and it's 2 weeks for a reason. Yep.
What can you use to read your XML?
What can you use to read your XML?
Yeah, to see it.
Oh, to see it? So, for example, do you mean if I call my server-side handler manually, how do I see the XML?
I guess, well, this is the way to debug it, for example.
Oh, okay. So what's a good way to debug your XML server-side handler? One way that you can use is using Firebug. So Firebug is an extension for Firefox that gives you some nice feedback. So if I've installed Firebug, so I can click on the Firebug icon, and then let's see. So each of these if I go to the net panel and then click on XHR, XML HTTP request, and then I open one of these nodes, then I click on response, and then click on load response, and then I can see the XML that was returned to me by the server. So this is what the solution code is doing. Okay? Does this answer your question? Yeah. Okay, so so Firebug is actually very nice. It's a very nice way of of debugging your AJAX queries, because it shows you precisely what the headers were, so what was sent to the server, and how the server responded. Okay? So this is it's the same thing as reading the XHR dot response text property. But you can see it here in visual form. Okay? And it also shows you the parameters of the AJAX of each AJAX query. You can see here that each of these has different parameters. Okay? So I think Firebug is linked to from the cs50.net resources page if you want to install it on Firefox. And I think Microsoft came out with a similar one recently for IE7 and IE8. All right, any more questions? No? Okay, so if you get stuck, the first port of call, as I said, was the Google Maps API documentation. If that doesn't solve your query, then you can try debugging your program using Firebug or something similar. And then you can go to the bulletin board, which has a lot of helpers helping. And you can also try office hours, of course. So with that, I say have a great Thanksgiving, and thank you for coming.
Thank you.